Hey, Veeam Community Podcast listeners, did you hear the news? Veeam is hosting a new event allowing you to discover a new level of availability for your modern data center. The inaugural VeeamON event will be held in October of this year at the Cosmopolitan in Las Vegas. Everything from executive keynotes, product deep dives, labs, certification resources, as well as a customer and partner showcase will be at the event. Pre-register today to qualify for introductory pricing. For more information and to register, go to go.veeam.com/VeeamON.
Hey, Veeam Community Podcast listeners. This is a special episode, which is a repost of an opportunity I had to be on the Greybeards on Storage podcast. I got to talk with Ray Lucchese and Howard Marks. You can check out the Greybeards on Storage podcast at silvertonconsulting.com. And it was my pleasure to be on their podcast. We talk about all things Veeam, but also a couple other miscellaneous storage topics. Enjoy this repost episode, everyone.
Hey everybody, Ray Lucchese here and
Howard Marks here.
Welcome to the next episode of Greybeards on Storage, a monthly podcast, a show where we get Greybeard storage and system bloggers to talk with storage and system vendors to discuss upcoming products, technologies, and trends affecting the data center today. Welcome to the ninth episode of Greybeards on Storage, which was recorded on June 6, 2014. We have with us here today Rick Vanover, Product Strategy Specialist, Veeam. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and your company, Rick?
Hey, Ray. Hey, Howard. Thanks for having me on, first of all. Product Strategy Specialist is kind of an interesting title, but long of the short, what do? I'm an evangelist. Basically, I find people, talk about the brand, and do stuff. You know, you might see me at a major event, and I do a lot with social media, do a lot with community stuff, and I can write. I'm not really that good at it, but I can. Do my own podcast, the Veeam Community Podcast, voted number 2 at the recent round of vSphereLand.com votes, and I'm on Twitter at Rick Vanover.
And I can endorse the Veeam Community Podcast. I have been a guest thereon.
Yes, that's right. Actually, and Ray's been a guest. He doesn't even know it, because the one time we did a podcast with Calvin at Storage Networking World in Dallas, and I said, "Hey, Calvin, give me the MP3," and then I redistributed it on the Veeam.
Yeah. I understand. That's good. So, what's new at Veeam these days?
Well, new at Veeam. Well, it's kind of interesting. It's always something new, first of all. So today, at the moment, right now, we are promoting our Veeam Availability Suite version 8, which is including the new version of backup and replication. And in the storage realm, there's actually some very interesting stuff coming around the Pike, especially for people who use NetApp storage or maybe people who use data domain storage. We have some great features there. We're just trying to do everything we can to support the needs of that modern data center today. I don't have to evangelize people to be virtual. That's easy. But basically, they want things faster. That's what I'm helping them with.
Why is backup so darn hard to do well?
I personally...
It's only a podcast, Ray.
Yeah, I know. I thought we'd get a lead in here and start, driving down below that, as we get into it. But, I find customers have, very seldom been satisfied with Veeam. Now, I haven't talked to a lot on Veeam with backup, in general, because of the complexity involved, the time it takes, and some of the failures that have occurred over the past. Now, I'll have to say, I have not talked with any Veeam customers, so I'm sure your product everybody is very satisfied with and love it. And I know that you have quite a following in the Veeam, in the VM space, and are moving into Hyper-V. But what is the big problem with backup?
Well, it starts with problems. Everybody has a problem. In fact, the best blog post I can never write, Ray and Howard, is the top 5 reasons why I hate tape. Since we started supporting tape last year, I can't write it now. All right, so, but
those top 5 problems almost always come down to, it wasn't the right technology.
Well, it came down to things like people smoking in the computer room, people right. stealing, actually selling the parts, those types of things, instead of keeping it around for restores. It's a great blog post. Catch me in a bar. I'll tell you the story. But everyone has a problem with data protection and backup that they don't really know about until they go to restore.
Yeah,
and I think that fundamental, everyone's got a story. I have stories, even with disk-based backups, where or lack of backups, even, where I've had a problem.
Or backups of parts of things.
Yeah, incomplete.
My favorite is, you know, of course we backed up the Exchange server. Did you back up the domain controllers? No.
Mm-hmm. Oh, but you actually want to restore email. Well, that's totally different, you know?
Yeah.
So everyone's got their story, and what we try to do is approach it differently. And it's a tough space, right? People deal with a lot of things, everything from the storage side of data protection to keeping users happy. But what I break it down to a lot of times is I say, look, our backup engine, honestly, you know, what we have coming with NetApp and what we've done with HP, it's got some front side smarts over there. But our backup engine is honestly pretty boring. We put all the legs on the restore. And what we have coming with version 8, well, the current count that I'm going to stick with is 39 restore scenarios from one agentless backup. So when you think of kind of, don't put all the effort on the backup. Put all the effort on the restore, and then I can get you out of trouble 39 different ways. I don't know. I think that speaks to the needs of what people want. You know, when you go down the restore path, I want to make sure that, you know, those risks are mitigated and people know what they're getting into, and it's got to be easy to use. So that's just the way the product thinks, and it kind of starts to address those problems that we've all had over the years.
Does Veeam offer some sort of restore test capabilities?
Yeah, so in terms of restore test, 4 years ago, this is one of those 39 ways, but we have this technique called a virtual lab that will emulate the recovery of the virtual machine. And what I mean by emulate is not just, okay, you know, I verified it, you know, it'll actually power it on and ensure that, like, in the VMware side, you get a heartbeat, like VMware tools and IP stack loads correctly. And then also, it'll check to say, hey, Exchange is running, because I can see it on the TCP port, stuff like that. And you can bundle a multi-tiered app, to Howard's point. Yeah, Exchange is useless until you have the domain controller to let it run, for example. So, yeah, we do have a emulated restore type that people put, like, on their most critical VMs. I mean, we say do it on everything, but honestly, that's the most complicated part of the product. But in the end, it's only a 7-click wizard to do that.
Yeah, but that's the biggest advance in data protection in the past 20 years. To be able to do both instant recovery and temporary recovery,
mm-hmm.
I just am convinced.
The biggest advance in 20 years?
For data protection.
Data protection?
For data protection.
What about deduplication? What about, storage libraries and stuff?
So I said 20 years, so we already had tape libraries. You could say backup to disk was a bigger change, and yeah. Backup to disk is necessary because you can't run a VM from tape.
Right.
But those were really not conceptual changes. The biggest conceptual change is this instant recovery. It's that I can have a VM fail or have a host fail and have the data be unrecoverably corrupted and bring that VM up without waiting however many hours it takes to copy the data from the backup repository back to primary storage.
And that's one part that I kind of glanced over, and that's that the Assure Backup and Instant VM Recovery. Basically, we take this disk-based backup, and then it's a window into the VMs from that backup restore point. so that when we need to use them, instant VM recovery, virtual lab, and some other things, we don't have to transfer that data back. We actually run it there. So it's an absolutely reversed perspective. A lot of times, recovery is move the data back and therefore it's available. No. Let's make it available, get the users off my back, aka boot it up in 2 minutes. Right. Then, because it's a virtual machine, I can do all kinds of interesting things, like migrate it back.
So if it's my ERP system, sure, it's going to run slow like pig from the backup repository, which is 4 terabyte, 7200 RPM drives, when it used to be running on a hybrid array that was 90% flash hit ratios. But I can get the 5 people in accounting up and running in 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Start a storage vMotion or a storage live migration.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the morning, it'll be back on primary storage and we'll be fully up and running. But limping now is way better than waiting hours for it to be back later.
Yeah, what would you rather do? Be walking down the street in crutches or be laying on the ground waiting for someone to pick you up? I mean,
neither, actually. I understand. So it's the instant recovery that's one of the best things that happened to last 20 years.
Well, that's 4 years old. That stuff is 4 years old. So
I know.
Well, it's 4 years old from you guys.
Yeah. But
it's just starting to hit the market from everybody else.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
you got to be careful there, and I'm not going to name any names, but this notion of an instant restore technique, I want to highlight this because there's a very important minor technical detail that can make a huge difference to how people say, oh, yeah, I can do that too. Now, one of the, especially in virtual machines, let's be very specific, that in VMware in particular, there's this notion of something called a reversed CBT. So VMware looks at blocks of virtual disks.
And change block tracking.
Change block tracking, exactly. That's a great kind of forward-looking technique when you do incremental backups. Hey, what's changed since the last time I was here? Okay, I got 3% change rate. Okay, scoop it up, move on, and it takes me no time to pick that up. Now,
well, more importantly, it takes you no time to figure out which blocks are the 3%.
Yeah,
exactly.
And back when I taught the backup school seminars for TechTarget, the one problem people kept presenting me with that I didn't have an answer for was, we have this NAS, and it has 7 million files on it. And when we run an incremental backup, it takes 2 days to walk the file system to identify which files have changed. It's not the backing up that took time.
Right.
It's the identifying.
Right.
And by building change block tracking into the architecture, that all gets eliminated.
Now, the caution here, though, is there's a lot of instant restore techniques that take that change block tracking data and work it in reverse. So, hey, I'll just manipulate the files back from a block level on the disk, and then you're back and running. Oh,
and just restore the change blocks? Is that
mm-hmm.
what you're saying?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
But the problem is, what if you delete the VM? Or what if your SAN fails?
Or the other data is corrupted.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
you can quickly, or you lost your VMware host, or you lost
right.
that host, or that
right.
cluster, or that storage network.
Right.
All
that,
those
that
situations.
That really only works for somebody fat-fingered and deleted a database. Let me bring it back.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Or a
yeah.
bad Windows update, you know,
like
it's a narrow use case.
Yeah, there's lots of cases where that works, and but not in the anything you would think about using the word disaster case with.
Right, it definitely user error stuff, but component failure.
Right, but the problem with reverse change block tracking is that it's faster restores, not eliminating restore time.
That's true. Absolutely. It is a faster restore for a situation, but that's why I like to kind of fully think about what could go wrong, right? You know, you could lose, you know, your fiber channel switch, then you're screwed, right? Because you can actually do this.
You can't do it. Yeah.
Well, no, I could do it
more ways than we want to count.
Right. Okay, so, you know, a lot of these 39 scenarios that you've talked about, an instant Instant Restore and the virtual lab and stuff like that. Are those sorts of things available for Hyper-V as well as VMware? Or?
Oh, good question. So when we hit version 7 last year, we pretty much had feature parity. I believe the only thing that we didn't have in version 7 was vCloud Director support when you kind of add those numbers up, of course, because that just doesn't apply to Hyper-V. And then we had some replica virtual lab capabilities that didn't apply to Hyper-V. Those have come, will come in version 8. And but, you know, if you want to say, I want to pull out an email message or a SharePoint item looking into version 8, a SQL Server record or maybe just a SQL database or an Active Directory user or a note item or a calendar item out of somebody's mailbox.
Right.
Those types of things, it adds up. Of course, files out of the guest VM. And then this is one of my little favorite sneak tricks is, you know, just give me the VMDK. And then from there, I'll let the application admin do their thing. So a lot of times I have to have different conversations with different people. If I'm talking to an infrastructure person, I kind of think below the app. You know, okay, here's the whole VM or here's everything that was on that data store. If I'm talking to an app person or the generalist maybe, then I'm like, okay, this VM Explorer for Exchange thing, this might be exactly what you need. You don't know all the Exchange command line tools, you know, or you don't know how SharePoint databases work. Let me just show you how to make it easy for you to restore. So depending on who I'm talking to, I really deliver a situational message because it's a lot of stuff when it comes to backup because just to say you have a VMware or a Hyper-V VM really doesn't tell me anything. What's inside of it? How many of them? How big are they, right? And Howard's point about those very large file servers, when you come underneath the infrastructure at the virtual disk level, VMware or Hyper-V, now that they both have virtual disk formats larger than 2 terabytes, you can have incremental backups comparatively just fly. I remember when I was at place I was at before, we had like a 7 terabyte, or maybe it was 4 terabyte file server, but the incrementals were only like 3 hours. And that was before change block tracking. So,
yeah.
You know, it can be awesome if you get it there.
Does Hyper-V support change block tracking kinds of things? Or?
Oh, trick question. So, Hyper-V does not have change block tracking in the form of an API like VMware has.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's not
mm-hmm.
good or bad. It's just different. Now, System Center has a change block. System Center Virtual Machine Manager, when you manage a host through that, has a change block tracking mechanism, but you lose it if you move the VM to different storage. To a different host. You'd always lose it on different storage because every block would change. So what we
just...
Go ahead.
And just in terms of general incremental backups, NTFS keeps a change journal.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're doing an incremental backup of an NTFS volume and your backup software is smart, it can ask NTFS what files changed and get a list and not have to walk the file system.
Yeah, but the world is moving to SMB3, right? So, I mean, the question is, you know, in this environment where I'm using Hyper-V, VHDs, SMB3, and all that stuff, and God, even SQL Server and SharePoint can go directly to SMB3. You know, how does this play in this game?
So we did write specifically a file system filter driver that we install on Hyper-V hosts, not on the guests, but on the host.
Okay.
Because it's a different, you know, we don't want to get in, we could, I guess, get into the business of making VIBs for VMware, but the API framework is so different. And then if you think about Hyper-V as a host, it's easier to develop around that.
So
the service we built, the Windows service, the part of the on-host proxy is what we call it, has a file system filter driver that will track those blocks of VHDs and VHDXs. And honestly, it's pretty slick, and it does support migration to different hosts. So we went that way, and actually... Just this week, we got a note that implementation hit certified for Windows Server 2012 R2 and 2012 and 2008 R2 for our Hyper-V. I mean, we've been Microsoft partners for a long time, but we've been working for additional kind of designations, and we got a certified level for that technique. So it's good stuff.
Yeah. That's interesting. 20 years, best thing that happened to hand protection in 20 years, instant recovery.
Well, yep.
I am impressed. All right, so now I got to bring up the downside of some of this stuff. You know, being able to recover an email or a note or you know an email folder or something like that, I think all that makes a lot of sense and is relatively painless when I screw up my emails and stuff like that. I really want that sort of capability. The challenge I had, and I wrote a little bit about this in the post I said, was, you know, doing those sorts of things for Active Directory or SQL Server or SharePoint, elemental restores, like restoring a table or restoring a row in a database, seems to me very dangerous.
Well, it can be. And we made these tools for people who may or may not be. Like for example, Veeam Explorer for SQL Server. If I am a SQL Server DBA, I don't know if I'd use it.
Yeah, I don't think you need it because I get the logs and journals, right. and I can go play it back and forward, and I don't need the problem.
Yeah, and if I'm a top dog Exchange engineer for a large environment, I know how to use ESE util in my sleep, maybe I don't need that either. I'm not saying you have to use that. I'm just saying it's there. That's 39 ways out of a problem.
As a former Exchange monkey, I can tell you, you still do individual item restores.
Using the backup capabilities or the restore capabilities rather than the utility. Yeah.
Oh, you get, you know, first of all, you get users who don't handle data well.
Yeah, the technology's getting really smart, but I can't say the users are either.
No. Every place I ever administered Exchange, I would come in and discover that they were never doing garbage collection. And I would set up a rule on the Exchange server that said anything that's in the deleted items folder that's more than 90 days old should be deleted. And then I set deleted item retention on the Exchange server to 90 days. So it's 180 days
before it's gone.
Yeah, there's plenty of ways to do these apps wrong. Don't get me wrong.
Every time, without fail, some senior executive comes around after the data has been deleted.
181st day, mind you.
and says, but I was using deleted items as an important part of my filing system.
No way! Howard!
My folder's gone. Which folder? Deleted
and
items.
Shame on him!
With subfolders of deleted items that are gone.
Wow.
And we send out memos, you know, 30 days before the first job runs and 15 days before the first job runs. And 4 days before the first job runs,
I ignore most of those.
We're going to do this.
I've got a folder in my deleted items for those messages, Howard. I don't read them.
Yeah.
Exactly.
They go directly to the deleted items folder.
I was working at a large advertising agency in New York who had the contract for a major computer vendor who shall remain nameless.
Oh, God.
And the vendor put the agency in review and decided to assign the account to a new agency, but the new agency wasn't going to be ready for 60 days. So the agency that I was working for got a 60-day extension.
Oh, God.
$2.3 million.
Which they deleted all the information about, yeah.
And they deleted the email.
Ah.
That authorized the $2
million. $2 billion? Dollars?
Million.
Yeah, okay.
And
this is a very valuable email.
Yeah.
Yes. And a year later, a request came to my desk, can you find this email?
Oh,
gosh. So, you know, these applications...
I found it,
yeah.
But it took you know, and you could, and then I could restore that one email back to the guy's mailbox.
Yeah.
I won't talk about how many weeks it took me to find it.
Yes, no, I understand.
But, you know, this story comes to mind every time I hear people say, we have a 30-day email retention policy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it goes back to this elemental recovery or elemental restore. You know, I understand emails. Database tables, database rows, Active Directory units, those are, in my mind, more dangerous than an email.
Oh, they're very much dangerous. I agree. But it's not like it's going to do it automatically for you. You know?
No, I understand.
This is the best analogy, and I've been using it a lot. These applications and these infrastructure solutions that I play in, great idea, right? You know, Exchange recovery, SharePoint recovery, but where and how you use it is much like a bicycle. And what I mean by that is, you know, it's very dependent on which the terrain you use it. So if you take your bicycle in a nice, clean, smooth street, it's going to be great. But if you start riding in the grass or in gravel or try to cross a creek, it's not going to be so fun. Different infrastructures can be that very much same experience. You take a tool like VMware and Hyper-V and then back it up with something like Veeam, but what are they doing inside of it? What are the users doing? It's not necessarily Exchange's fault, or it's not necessarily, you know, let's say, in fact, I had an email just yesterday, or no, it was a Spiceworks thread, of a gentleman who needs to restore a SQL Server database, test database, by the way, to 2 p.m. of yesterday. Mm-hmm. And he only runs backups every night. He doesn't have a DBA, doesn't have the logs. And I'm like, oh, man, I'd love to give you that new Veeam Explorer for SQL Server last week, because then it would help you.
But, yeah.
But right now you're limited to, you know, the last time you took that image-based backup. But
right.
I'm going to put it in a category of what I call daily disasters. And they happen. Deleting a file, you know, deleting an OU out of Active Directory, imagine if someone, or imagine a upset, disgruntled employee time bombs some sort of script that disabled all computer accounts with a service account the day after he leaves or something. I mean, imagine how bad that would be. Or knocked out the OU of users. I mean, I don't want to scare people, but I'm just saying.
I haven't been that bad, but I have.
Howard.
No. Allow me to rephrase that.
Yeah.
I am never that bad, and I have not seen anything that bad.
Yeah, that's good.
But I have seen administrators delete a group and then discover that that group had the only permissions to some folders.
Oh, yeah.
And the easiest thing to do is just restore the group because you get the same SID.
Yeah.
Yeah, SID, the SID is actually very important because our tool, the new tool, Veeam Explorer for Active Directory, does maintain SID identity. So, you know, little details like that can make a huge difference in that, like I said, those daily disasters, everything from users to infrastructure problems to bad apps to bad scripts, you know, real problems, malicious problems. Plenty of things can go wrong. That's why I like having that large arsenal of ways out of a jam. And it includes, of course, bringing the whole VM back or maybe just a file, right? I mean, I don't have a breakdown of different restore scenarios, but I bet. Even with
it just turns out that I do.
Okay.
Really?
Well, I just finished writing for Information Week Analytics, our annual state of the backup report.
Oh my God.
Which is coincidental since Ray chose our guest this week. And so we send out a 40 question survey that asks people how they make their backups and how they do their restores.
Hmm.
And every year when you look at, you know, what kind of restores do you do, almost everybody does single file restores all the time.
Yeah.
When you start talking about full system restores, only 8% of the people in our survey do them at least once a week.
Hmm.
And only 35% do them occasionally.
So a test kind of a scenario? Or?
Well, I mean, if you have a big enough data center, you probably have systems failing weekly.
Okay, yeah.
But 19, so 12% say they do single-file restores on a daily basis.
Yeah.
19% say they do single-file restores on a weekly basis.
I include myself in the latter category.
And for entire systems, that's 2% and 6%.
Yeah.
That's true. It is a huge – I'd say that even – then you get more specific, like application stuff, and it's a very long tail beyond that, probably.
Right.
Well, we ask about individual items and mailboxes and stuff like that, too. But, you know, too frequently when we talk about backup, people think about the full system restore, because that's what they're afraid they're going to have to do.
Yeah, right. Worst case.
But that's not what they do all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're protecting themselves against that worst case scenario.
Yeah.
While making their lives more difficult on the things they do frequently.
But that's where these 39 different restore scenarios pay vast dividends, I guess, right?
Exactly.
Because you're backing up the whole system, but you're giving them the ability to restore a virtual machine or restore an email or restore a table or restore an OU or whatever, you know, mm-hmm. things of that nature.
Yeah, and the only catch point is, though, that too many times, again, people have those bad historical stories with their own professional experience with backup, and it sometimes is an afterthought. And what I mean by that is a lot of times they put backups on inferior storage, and you guys will agree with this, that you can always find lesser expensive storage, right?
Yeah.
And so if you keep looking, you'll find that was half the price of this one. Oh, look at that. That one's 30% less than that. You can just keep going, right? And the performance usually goes with it.
And then you end up at some guy who bought a Quanta server and filled it full of Western Digital drives and installed Linux on it and said, here, it runs NFSD, you can back up to it.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And then, again, remember the bicycle. You know, your experience will depend on the terrain you go. And when we talk about larger data profiles, especially VMs, it's not necessarily fun. And I know Howard and I have been talking about some different disk targets and stuff, and I'd love to see people put, you know, production class stuff to hold their backups, you know. Granted, I'm not paying the bill when I'm making that recommendation.
Right.
But
right. Well, I mean, there are substantially different requirements.
Oh, God. Yeah. The IO requirements for backup versus normal activity? Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, if I was designing, you know, the backup target of my dreams, it would have just a tiny bit of flash for metadata.
Yeah.
But since everything, you know, since all the real data is primarily sequential, spread it across a bunch of spinning disks. That's going to work fine.
I was going to say spread it across a bunch of tape drives and stuff in the tape library and stuff, because it's all serial and sequential.
Well,
high throughput, you know.
Except on restore.
Yeah.
So what? Just for anybody who's using Veeam, just I will say this, and I'll tell anybody this. Our highest performing environments are always a physical server with a JBOD attached to it. And the only feature I want on that storage is RAID. Okay?
JBOD?
I'm serious. It's the fastest target.
Backup target is a JBOD on a server that's running?
A large shelf of drives?
Yeah.
On a SAS array or maybe even direct fiber to it? It's always the fastest.
Oh my lord!
It's just got scale problems.
As many one example, the Cisco UCS C series, they have one that have 24 local drives on it.
Right.
Even for rotational storage, that's a lot of capacity and a lot of spinning drives on one array. That works pretty good.
Are you somehow optimizing your access to those drives to continue, you know, to spread the workload across them and stuff like that, or?
Well, if it's one big volume, we would leverage the operating system to do that. So, no, we don't have very specific individual drive. That's the plight of agnosticism, I'll be honest with you.
Right.
Because we are technically storage agnostic, and when I mentioned that design there of being a JBOD, that would be a Windows system with like an NTFS volume.
Right.
So
right.
It's up to Windows. And
to service it better, yeah.
And now that we've got 24 cores in that thing, Windows software RAID looks a lot better than it used to.
Yeah, true. Okay. We are almost at the end of our time together. I have a couple of final questions, and then I'll turn it over to Howard. So, you know, all this focus on virtual machines and Hyper-V and KVM, those sorts of things. I understand that, but do you guys do, you know, just plain backup for physical servers that are not virtual machine oriented?
Not with Veeam backup and replication. Okay. You know, we get that. That's the number one most requested thing, to support physical servers.
Yeah.
But just the logic that the product has right now, I no is the answer.
Okay. I think that's my last question. Howard, do you have any last questions for Rick?
The biggest question I have is really, you know, does Rick have some explanation as to why, when we keep doing surveys, and it's not just our surveys, that most people, when you say, how are you backing up your VMs, are still using an agent in every VM? I mean, I understand why you only want one backup system, so you're going to keep using NetBackup for everything, but I don't understand why you're not going to use the vStorage API for data protection.
Well, I have to fight that battle every day. And then sometimes, you know, not that people have made bad decisions in the past with those products.
But they have.
But, well, I mean, it's just like I spin it this way. Like, they might be missing out on these frameworks. If you understand vSphere APIs for data protection, if you understand Hyper-V and VSS on the host, you know, if you let me explain that to them, they have a chance of saying, oh, wow. That means my file server of 15 million files or 15 billion, whatever, files and 8 terabytes might speed up. Oh, yeah, yes, it would, you know. So if I get that through their head, then I have a good chance of letting them give it a try. And that's what it comes down to. Backup is one of those things that, you know, people put their own kind of career on it in a sense, because everyone knows a failure that you can't restore from is indeed a resume-generating event. So I always tell people, don't listen to me. If you have a question on how something works, I'll tell you. But I always tell people, download it, try it. In fact, I get the question all the time, this product versus Veeam, that product versus Veeam. I say, you figure it out. Download it here. Put them side by side, try to do this, try to do that, then let me know if you have any questions. So, yes, people still go a different route, and I get that. I do. It's a big market. Honestly, we have a lot of opportunity even still. I mean, we have some, you know, impressive milestones that we've had, but I don't think we'll ever be done reaching out and finding those people that can do, you know, protection better and really delivering always on business. That's what it's all about, is keeping those users away from us.
Okay, well, that seems like a good point to end this discussion. This has been great. Thank you, Rick, for being on our call.
Sure.
Next month, we will talk to another startup storage technology person. Any questions you have, let us know. That's it for now. Bye, Howard.
Bye, Ray. Bye, folks.
And thanks again, Rick. Until next time.